when you're on the boat, you know, a lot of people are probably going to be like, wait a second, you're on a boat taking a lazy ride on the Rio Grande?
And it's raining.
If this is a national emergency, it ain't too bad, is it?
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, 24 hours on the U.S.-Mexico border. Over the past 2 months, President Trump has been in a fight with Congress to fund the building of a border wall.
The federal government remains shut down for one reason and one reason only, because Democrats will not fund border security.
He partially shut down the federal government for 35 days, the longest shutdown in history, and now he's declared a national emergency.
It's a great thing to do because we have an invasion of drugs, invasion of gangs, invasion of people, and it's unacceptable.
As Congress and the White House continue to clash over the funding of the border wall, we wanted to meet the community who will actually be affected by the government's decisions about the border and immigration. So we flew down to Texas.
The only light there is right now is coming from the headlights of a car.
Producer Maggie Freeling and I are driving down a dirt road near the Rio Grande in Mission, Texas.
Here it is, here it is. Okay.
It's really early in the morning, it's raining, and it's still dark. And we can barely see the path in front of us.
Walking in this pathway, little hill, up to this teeny, tiny little church.
We went down there because we wanted to visit La Lomita Chapel. It's threatened by the border wall. And so, you know, we wanted to go down, see what was going on, see this very specific example of life and a community being disturbed by the wall. So we go down and we see this historic chapel built in 1865.
Okay, yeah. We're at the beautiful La Lomita Chapel down on the banks of the Rio Grande River. This is the old mother church of Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish.
This is Father Roy Snipes, and he's the pastor of La Lomita Chapel, where we are. And he's kind of become like a bit of a media darling since all of this news broke about the chapel. And he's been given the nickname, the Cowboy Priest. And he's also here with his dogs.
These are my guardian angels. They look pretty pleased, don't they? This is Charlotte. We rescued her on the road to La Lomita. And this is Bendito. We rescued his mom on the road to La Lomita.
La gracia de nuestro Señor Jesucristo, el amor del Padre y la sabiduría y la fuerza, la energía del Espíritu Santo estén con todos ustedes.
Y con su espíritu.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day.
I felt like I was in a children's book that was written for little kids to fall in love with their like little local church, which is like the size of a teeny tiny schoolhouse.
This is a place where the gentle, humble, and kind people of God have prayed for over 150 years. And this is where I made my final vows 39 years ago.
What does it look like?
Looks like a humble little ranch chapel, and that's what it is. And it tells us, remember to be humble and kind, even if the powers that be are arrogant and cruel.
And during the service, Father Roy actually prayed for the church and for everyone in the community who could really be affected by the building of this wall on their land.
Let's also pray for all of our neighbors, because a lot of the ranchers, I was just talking to some ranchers from Starr County last night on the phone, doesn't look good for them.
It's not looking good for the ranchers in the area or for La Lomita Chapel, because the wall isn't planned to exactly follow the border. That's impossible. So in some sections, it will go slightly inland to the United States. And this chapel could end up being on the southern side of the wall if it actually gets built.
The atmosphere of this place, this sacred place, would be absolutely ruined by a wall there. More or less where that cyclone fence is.
So that's where they want to put it?
Yeah.
And so what's happening is they're suing the federal government. They're using the religious freedom argument, and they're taking their own action. They're saying, we're not going to let this happen to our church, to all of our congregants, to our worshipers. This is a historic place, and people have been coming here all their lives. We met congregants in their 80s who were once altar boys at La Lomita.
It hurts. You know, I would have loved to have had them say, of course we'll respect the rights of the church. If you don't want us to come there, we won't come there. We've got billions of dollars. We can do something else. But that's not what they said. So it felt humiliating might not be the right word. It might be a little bit too strong. Just, you know, deeply disappointing, especially in Texas. This is Texas, man. This is our property. You can't just march in here with the government, you know.
From there, Father Royce actually puts on his cowboy hat. Because when he's at the altar, he doesn't wear it. Puts on his cowboy hat and says, hey, you want to go to the river?
It's right here. It's tied up in the water.
So that's what we're getting in?
That's what we're going to go. We call the boat Old Blue Eyes.
But, so Father Snipes says this boat was a gift from an Irishman with blue eyes. So that's how it got its name. And he uses the boat to just escape from everything. It's his sanctuary.
I got to tell you, being on a boat on the Rio Grande that was just going like la-di-da down the river was very strange.
If this boat could talk, it could tell you some great tales. Up the river is more undeveloped. Like you might see the cattle and the horses coming down to drink in the riverbank.
Do you ever see people crossing?
Yeah, yeah. Not real common, but it's not unheard of. Yeah, we do see it.
And what does this river signify for you?
Oh, I'd have to be a poet. The river is sacred to us. Of course, it's a source of water, which is absolutely necessary. But it's also keeps us in touch with our history and romance and poetry and adventure and recreation. We loved it. You come down here and relax. It's good for your soul, you know. I'll do that sometimes when I'm particularly distressed. Just get in the boat, take the dogs out for a cruise and kind of heal my wounded heart or soothe my wounded heart.
So as we're making our way, we look off to the left, and we saw, in fact, that there was a Border Patrol boat.
So that's the Border Patrol, which are literally just steps from La Lomita.
Leaving at the
hello. Hello, we're waving to the Border Patrol. Just saying, they're in boats.
This is a place where there's no wall yet, just Border Patrol and the river. And the community is rallying around places like La Lomita to keep it like that. But we also wanted to see how communities are reacting to the government policies in towns where a wall already does exist. So after our time in Mission, Texas, we got in the car and we drove east, right to the Gulf of Mexico, where the border ends.
So from there, we went to Brownsville, one of the bigger cities in the Rio Grande Valley. And that's where we first saw a section of the wall that's actually already been built, and where we saw the self-proclaimed dragtivists. Yeah. Putting on a drag show on the wall to claim their space and say, we are here. This is our home, too.
A lot of the times, the rhetoric, the messaging that we hear every day gets very toxic. And speaking as an organizer myself here in the Valley, I'm burnt out. We're all burnt out. But we keep showing up because we care. We keep showing up because it matters. And we keep showing up because it's important. So thank you guys for showing up today.
There was such a scene. And I think what I enjoyed the most was the elderly white couple in their lawn chairs, actually like as if they were in a full-blown performance watching people in drag, singing their hearts out, and by the way, dancing too with some serious stilettos.
Yes, right in front of the wall. Like, backdrop is the wall.
And so the event that we went to, it was like a protest, but it was also a fundraiser to support LGBTQ asylum seekers entering the United States.
For $200.
$200.
So while we were at the drag show slash rally, we got a call from a guy named Mike Benavides. And he's not an activist or a public figure. He's just a regular guy who lives in Brownsville.
And we wanted to talk to Mike because he runs a group called Team Brownsville, which helps asylum seekers in the Brownsville community. And these people are waiting for their claims to be processed. And so what Mike does is he places them in shelters in the area in the meantime. And he also runs errands across the border, bringing things like sleeping bags and food and medicine and diapers to the asylum seekers who are waiting in Mexico, sometimes for months, to put their claim of asylum in.
How are you? Thank you so much for doing this.
No problem.
Hi, Maggie. Nice to meet you.
We end up meeting Mike in a park, and he's just like this middle-aged guy.
So, tell us what's going on.
I'm just crossing from Mexico. I take breakfast in the morning. At 6 o'clock, I take tacos, coffee, juice, water. There's about 45 people right now. They're sleeping on the street.
He said he started all this in June. That was right about the time when zero tolerance went into effect. And he felt compelled to help out in any way he could because he saw the changes and the effects this was having on his community.
Voy a entrar. Voy a entrar. Tengo dos reporteros, pero no tienen cámara. ¿Cómo está, amigo?
¿Cómo está?
Aquí estamos. De Cuba, ¿verdad?
Sí.
¿Cómo le va?
Bien. Gracias a Dios.
First, Mike takes us to this shelter that he collaborates with that's based on the U.S. side of the border. And this is a shelter for people who have just gotten out of detention and have absolutely no idea where to go next. It's really a nondescript building in the middle of downtown Brownsville.
¿Cómo estás? Hola. Hola. Silvia Palomo.
And here we meet a volunteer named Silvia Palomo. She's 42 years old. She's originally from Mexico. She's been living in Brownsville for 16 years. And she and her husband decided to volunteer because they want to help these immigrants. And they say they do it from the heart because they say they once needed help when they arrived, and now they want to give it.
Nuestro voluntariado es primeramente que nazca del corazón. Es servir a otras personas como alguna vez nosotros servimos para que nos ayudaran también.
And from there, we walk into a room filled with the actual people that we're hearing about on the news all of the time. We're seeing the people who are seeking asylum in the United States.
Yeah, and you know what was surprising is there was someone from India. There was someone from
Cuba, Colombia, Ecuador, Bangladesh. We were talking to people who have just been released from immigrant detention facilities. One of them had been in there not for months, but for years.
I live in Bangladesh, March 7, 2016.
How long were you in detention?
2 years, more than 2 years.
When did you get out?
Today morning.
Today?
Yes.
How do you feel?
Today I feel is better.
And they're scared, and they look lonely and exhausted. I spoke to another asylum seeker from Colombia, who also said that he had just gotten out of detention that day. His eyes looked exhausted, but he said that he was just happy to be alive. As we're walking out, I'm wondering, where are the women? And then I see a room with a door that's closed and a sign that says Mujeres. And so I ask, can we say hello to the women? I speak with someone from Honduras who tells me that she left her country in November, that she had a business, but that she was being extorted. And because she wasn't paying, she was being threatened now. And that's why she had to leave her country. And after we speak to a few of the asylum seekers at the shelter, we leave and then we cross into Mexico. Coming up on Latino USA.
So before, if I were seeking asylum, I would walk into the port of entry and I would be processed for asylum. Now instead of coming in, they tell you go down there and take a number.
We speak to the asylum seekers waiting on the other side of the border in Mexico. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Do you see Jesus in the burnt toast?
Do you realize that literally there is a bucket of condoms by the exit?
Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me?
We cannot just say stop, I want to get off.
Invisibilia, season 5, out March 8th.
We're back. And when we left off, producer Maggie Freely and I were about to cross the U.S.-Mexico border with Mike Benavides. He's a local school administrator, but essentially he's dedicated his life now to helping migrants. He takes them supplies like sleeping bags, medication, food, diapers. The sound that you're hearing is this wagon that he's pulling to haul around the supplies he's about to deliver.
They'll x-ray the bags, and then we'll go right on in. So before, if I were seeking asylum, I would walk into the port of entry, and I would be processed for asylum. Now, instead of coming in, they tell you go down there and take a number and sleep on the street for a couple of weeks.
And crossing into Mexico and going over and meeting asylum seekers waiting at the port of entry to get admitted to the United States, they looked at Mike as kind of like, you know, this savior person. Like, he came in, everyone suddenly surrounded him, and they were telling him all the drama that was happening and updating him on supplies and things that they needed.
So what just happened?
Well, they were trying to run them out of here for some reason. The Mexican officials tried to run them out of here.
Yeah, they say that it happens often, that, like, some of the officials will try to move people from being in this little park, or that other Mexicans will just come by and kind of insult them for being there.
But where else could they go? If they go up there, it's very dangerous everywhere else. They're protected here. There's lights. This is a well-lit area. This is a public park.
Are all of these people who are here, what about those people behind the fence?
Yeah,
who are
also,
they?
They're asylum seekers also that we bring dinner to. They're from, that's a group from El Salvador. They all kind of stay together as a family.
And so now people are just putting tents up to somehow sleep.
Right.
So they're not in the cold.
In the elements, correct. They all have sleeping bags except three. These guys just showed up, so I'm getting them sleeping bags and some tarps to cover themselves.
Mike almost immediately springs into action, you know, talks to everyone, sees how they are, sees what they need, goes to the store to get a pregnant woman some painkillers, and comes back and says, I need to get them more sleeping bags.
There were short supplies. More people showed up, so I have to go back and come back again.
Tonight?
Right. Because people, they're just showing up, and they're showing up. And if I have a stockpile of things, I'm afraid they're going to disappear, you know? And I wish I had, like, a storage here where I could keep things, but I can't, so I'm going to have to make another trip back.
For me, one of the things that was really hard to see was the father with his daughters. Mm-hmm. You could see the frantic look on his face, the fact that he said it, in my life did I imagine that I would ever end up here on a border asking to come into the United States.
Why did you leave Honduras?
Mire, yo dejé Honduras y me vine por la razón que a mi hija me la violaron. Me quemaron mi casa.
So he told us that he left Honduras with his family because his daughter was raped. And he said that their house was burned down and they were living on the street for a little while. And he really just said he never thought he would be in this kind of situation with, you know, people rejecting him and treating him poorly for being an immigrant.
And as he's holding back tears, the man says, we came in search of protection. And then he says to the U.S. government, if you hear this, have mercy. We didn't come because we wanted to come.
que por favor tenga piedad de nosotros porque yo no me he venido porque yo me he querido venir.
You know that there are children who are suffering and in poverty and who are not sleeping in the best conditions, but after you're really right there with them and you're seeing them with your own eyes and you're seeing that people are sleeping with nothing more than a tarp covering them, you know, it really gets into your head.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 48 ports of entry between the U.S. and Mexico. And what we saw is happening all along the border.
And so that's why Mike, he does what he does. I mean, he's making multiple trips crossing the border at 9 o'clock at night, and he's going to work in the morning.
Okay, so I just want to describe what we're seeing. So there are one, two, three tents. And now since we've gotten here, there is just a tarp that's covering some people. And there's a family underneath this tarp. They're sleeping on cement.
A lot of babies.
And the babies are smiling. You know, this baby is smiling and they're like, listen.
Hola.
Hola.
So we head back to the United States, and as we're getting ready to leave, we're in Mike's car, and Mike sees one more thing. Like, we're about to call it a night, and he says, oh, wait. That's a bus.
Okay, so it's a white van that looks nondescript. There's nothing that's written on it. We're turning into, what is this?
It's a Brownsville bus station.
It's the bus station. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. We're back at the bus station, and we're behind this van. It's stopping here.
This bus is driving asylum seekers who have just been released from detention, and we see them as they drop off two women.
So I'm seeing somebody get out of the bus right now with a couple of bags. You can hear them opening. There's a cage. They turn on the light, and they're letting somebody, there's letting a woman come out. They're handing her a bag.
And we're actually seeing them as they're walking in. These are two women who have just been released from an ICE detention facility in the United States. It's close to 10 p.m. at night.
Right. And here they are just getting dropped off at a random Greyhound bus station with practically no information about where they should be going, what they should be doing. And so this is what Mike does. Him and his people, they wait at the station and they let them know, hey, we have a shelter for you to stay at until you can figure your stuff out. I can help you.
I'm walking right behind them.
So I walk up to them and I introduce myself.
Hola, compañeras. Hola, buenas. Yo soy periodista. Mi nombre es María Hinojosa. ¿Ustedes de dónde son?
De Honduras.
And they tell me that they're from Honduras and that they were in detention for 8 and 15 days, respectively, and that right now they have no idea where to go.
¿A dónde van ahora? ¿Ustedes se quedan a dormir aquí en esta estación?
No sé, ahorita voy a averiguar, no sé.
No, ustedes no saben nada.
The look in their eyes is one of kind of numbness, of not knowing what is going to happen in the next 5 minutes, not knowing at all. It's a look that I think for me has kind of stuck in my head after this trip, the look of just exhaustion, of people not knowing what's going to come next, of people having an expectation of this country, and kind of the reality is leaving them in shock.
So what I saw was people, your everyday person, a priest, Mike, trying to reclaim the narrative of their community that's been hijacked in this, like, larger national debate around immigration.
I don't know if I've ever gotten a feeling of the border in the way that we just experienced it. I mean, I do think that when you go down there, you cannot escape the fact that there is an extraordinary human drama that is going on there all the time, 24/7. But there is a real intention of people who continue to live there to kind of live their lives, to find their place in the normalcy of life, even when there is a president who is declaring that the zone where they live is actually in a national emergency.
Mike is going to wake up. He's going to cross the border again two or three times before he goes to work at the school. You know, the dragtivists will be there. They're going to be performing. And Father Roy, the cowboy priest, will continue to pray for his church and all these people in this community who see these things every day.
Thank you, Maggie Freeling, for reporting that story with me. This episode was produced by Maggie Freeling and Miguel Macias and edited by Sofia Paliza-Carr and Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Maya Cueva, and additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And one more thing, dear podcast listener. Can you take a moment to rate and review Latino USA? Because this really helps other listeners to find us, and we know you want to help us do that. And also, every sentence that you write is inspiring to us, so keep your comments coming. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao, hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
My Mexican people, we love them, those Latinos. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, we go inside the only shelter for unaccompanied minors in Tijuana, Mexico, and we get a look into the daily lives of these teenagers as they wait for an uncertain future. That's next time on Latino USA.
We may be on the verge of another sexual revolution. In this one, we turn to machines for companionship and sex.
My main objective is to be a perfect companion.
How artificial intelligence and robots are changing the landscape of love, this week on Hidden Brain.